Welcome to the All About Alts podcast, where we explore the world of alternative investing to help you find financial independence. Join our host, Newview Trust's president, Jason DeBono, as he covers a variety of topics with different guest speakers to discuss tax and alternative investing strategies. It is never too late to start taking control of your financial future, and we are so excited for you to be joining us for this opportunity to hear from some of the best in the business.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the All About Alts podcast. I am your host, Jason DeBono, and I am joined with Nasreen Ali, who is a whole lot of things and some really cool things. I think maybe by day job, she's an actuary. And for those that don't know, just think mathematics times 1,000, and we'll talk about that. She's also a full-time real estate investor and also serves as the president of the Jacksonville Real Estate Investor Association. So with all of her free time, she does all three of those things. Nasreen, good to have you on the show.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me, Jason.
So Nasreen, let's talk about an actuary, right? Like as a job, and I'm familiar with the role because I'm on the retirement side, which certainly is a role that actuaries work alongside regularly. But what exactly is that? From a profession, what are some of the things that type of profession does? Walk us through it.
Yeah, so actuaries primarily manage financial risk, and mostly actuaries work in the insurance industry, though there are certain industries that are looking to use the skills of actuaries for managing risk. You mentioned retirement. That is one field that actuaries can work in. So we have retirement and pension actuaries. The others include health insurance, which is where I work in health insurance. So I would be considered a health actuary. And then there are property and casualty insurance, which are things like your car insurance and your home insurance. So at the heart of all of it, it's about managing, using financial models to manage risk.
And if I recall, and you've probably heard this before, I think it's the movie Along Came Polly. Is that Ben Stiller is an actuary in the movie, if I recall? Like that's his, he manages risk and he won't take any risk because he knows the risk of everything down to the
right.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's perfect. Right. So if you really want to kind of understand the life of an actuary, go watch that movie. I don't know if it's perfect, but it does give you an understanding of it.
It's definitely a parody of an actuary.
Well, you know, you mentioned managing risk. I mean, what an interesting segue into real estate, right? I mean, that's certainly, it's, you know, crunching numbers and pro forma-ing upside, but I'd almost make a case, I'd rather know the downside and manage the risk, and the upside will find its way there. Is that what got you into real estate? Was there a tie back to that, or was it just happenstance and you just happened to be good at it, the real estate piece, because you had this professional career that gave you some experience?
Yeah, I was a young actuary working and living in Toronto, and I was renting, and one of my coworkers said, "Hey, why don't you buy?" Because her husband was a realtor, and I was afraid of buying. I never thought about real estate. I just the whole idea of commitment, because I really wanted to travel. I was thinking of I'd just come back from living in Australia. I wanted to travel. I wanted to try working in the U.S. I had all these amazing travel plans, because with the actuarial career, it's a versatile designation. You can work in any country. So the idea of buying a piece of real estate really scared me. But then I started thinking, well, maybe it's a good idea. She ran some numbers. Mortgage ended up being less than rent. I'm like, okay, I'll humor you. So she knew what she was doing. She took me to the building that she and her husband lived in, which was this beautiful condo overlooking the water in the heart of downtown, 24-hour concierge. It was just gorgeous. The rooftop, garden, gym. It was everything that I think at that time, a young person, it's just so appealing. I could walk to work. And then they took me to see all these other properties. So I think, you know, they knew what they were doing when I saw the first one. I said, okay, I'm going to buy it. I bought it really to move in. A year later, I decided to move to the US, and I didn't even know about if I sold it, I didn't think, would I make money? I just knew I was moving. It was a quick decision. And another friend of mine had become a realtor. And so she said, well, let me just put a tenant in it for you. And I said, well, that sounds good. As long as like, I'm not, you know, paying the full mortgage. So I moved to the US and I'm collecting rent and it blows my mind. Now at the time the rent was paying the mortgage, but I was still supplementing with condo fees. And it still blew my mind that I was paying $300 a month and I was owning this amazing condo on the water in Toronto. Like I couldn't really wrap my head around how that worked out. So that's when I started thinking, maybe I can do this again. I did buy a property in New Jersey. I was living in New Jersey at the time. Unfortunately, I was one of those people that did buy during the housing crash bubble thing. Yep. Fast forward a few years, I ended up losing that property to a short sale. I think that anybody who's investing in real estate probably has a story of some kind of loss. You lost money, lost property. Big learning experience for me. I found myself in a situation where I had moved to Jacksonville. I was renting that property and the Canadian property. My tenants moved and I thought, let me sell it, and it just wouldn't sell at the time the market crashed. And I was paying the mortgage there, paying rent here. I was the only provider for my family of five. So I just started missing payments. And long story short, we know how a short sale works. So that was a downer, but I knew I had to keep going and I don't know why. Funny enough, I sold a condo in Canada, maybe if we're talking about 10 years later, I sold it and made enough money after paying off the mortgage, paying the realtor fees, paying foreign tax, because I was living in the US now and Canadian taxes are crazy. Suffered the interest rate from Canada to the US, and with what was left in Jacksonville, I was able to buy two properties cash, which is crazy. So once I got on that path, I mean, it was just like I was addicted. There was no way I was going to stop. All this doing kind of while retaining my job as an actuary. But I mean, that was my start in real estate, really. Yeah.
Well, what a great, I mean, I love hearing about the background. I think there's a few things I heard there that I hope people really listen to, which is it wasn't perfect. It wasn't by design. No. There were probably a ton of sleepless nights. The short sale process doesn't feel good and you feel like you failed and you go through this whole stretch. But what came out of that was there's still success to be had. And the fact that you sold that condo, made enough money, paid everything off, and parlayed that into two investments, while it doesn't solve the stress, you look back and go, maybe it was actually worth it.
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, the New Jersey property, you know, yes, I lost money and my credit with a short sale, your credit gets destroyed for a while. So even though I sold the Canadian property, I still couldn't qualify for a mortgage. So I was still renting here in Jacksonville, but I owned investment property, which seems to be the other way around that you should do it. I had enough cash to buy a couple investment properties, but I didn't have enough cash to buy a home that I wanted to live in. Or even if I had a large down payment, I couldn't qualify for the mortgage. So I knew I had to put the money to work and I just ended up buying those two homes, which has saved me time and time again. So, yeah.
Well, it's that accumulation of assets and, you know, your home can be an asset, you know, but most people don't buy a home as an asset. It kind of qualifies as one because you're paying the mortgage down and you could be paying rent, but you would not buy the homes you probably rented, which were the best, you know, from an investment standpoint as your primary residence, right? Because right. You care what the counters look like and you care about the neighborhood and to say you don't in your rental properties, but at the end of the day, you know, you run the numbers to make money. You don't run the numbers to live in it. And when you buy, you know, personal primary residence, you buy it for you. And by the way, it's a good investment, right? That there's some justification there. So
yeah.
So let's keep the story going. So you've got these two properties, right? You've got a short sale on your credit. So you're a little bit limited in what you can do from a debt standpoint. What did you do? You're still working as an actuary and you're still doing that today. So you've got this career, which is great. What are you doing on the real estate side? And what did the next, you know, kind of walk us through that time in your life up to kind of current times? How many more properties did you buy? Have you liquidated any of them? You know, is your position more to buy and hold? What's kind of fueled that? And then we'll maybe, you know, after that, get into kind of how'd you get involved with the Jacksonville Real Estate Investment Association and what's that experience been like?
Sure. So, when I moved during the short sale, I'd had my three kids, but I was going through a divorce, which added to the complication of, I just didn't even care about the New Jersey property. So, now I'm a single mom of three children, right? I have these two investment properties and, I'm working as an actuary, but this is pre-COVID. I'm going to work every day. And by June, July, I'm running out of vacations because with three kids, when they get sick, and I was homeroom mom for all three of them. So I'm going on field trips. Between field trips and them getting sick, I'm out of vacation by June, July. So Christmas, all the next half of the year, God help them. So I started asking my employer if they would allow me to work remotely. And back then in 2017, that just wasn't the thing.
Yeah.
And I started searching for remote jobs, couldn't find them. So I actually left the actuarial profession to sell insurance, which is the closest thing I knew in addition to real estate. So I left so that I could sell insurance to have that flexibility to be with my kids and of my time. And during that time, my credit healed and suddenly I could qualify for a mortgage, but I no longer had the income. And although my business had replaced roughly half of what I was making as an actuary in the first couple of years, they needed two full years of tax returns when I tried to buy a primary home. So, COVID shut my business down just prior to the 2 years. Then I started consulting as an actuary, made up the difference. Now I had the income, but I didn't have the business history of my consulting. It was just a big mess. Couldn't qualify for a mortgage. So I rented for 14 years, still had these two properties, didn't have a job. Can't sell, just taking consulting gigs as I go along. So a little after COVID, I started thinking, well, everyone's going remote. Maybe I can re-enter the actuarial field, get a job remote, still have the flexibility and continue, which is what I did. So in 2021, I returned to the actuarial career. And by then, I decided to liquidate one of the properties. At this point, I would have held for 5 years. So I was able to make some decent returns on that property. That property was able to help me for a down payment for my primary home. So finally, I had the credit healed, I had the down payment, and I had the job, and I was able to buy a primary home. And that property helped me also to renovate the primary home. The second property, I did a cash out refinance, and with that, I invested in a third. Within 12 months, I did a sale, a cash out refinance. I bought a primary and then I bought another investment property, which is this thing. So then that was what, 21, 22. Last year, I was able to, using hard money, which was a new space for me, and working with wholesalers, which again was a new space for me, I was able to acquire a fourth property. So it's just really been figuring it out as it goes. I think the big message here is I didn't have a plan. Things were getting thrown at me from all different directions, and I just kind of fumbled through it. And it's okay if you fumble through it. Because I think it's really, really easy to judge yourself and think, I don't know what I'm doing, and therefore I'm doing nothing. I really, really didn't know what I was doing. Around 2017-18, I got looped into Jax Rhea. I was a member. In 2020, I was asked to serve as president, so I ran. I was asked to run for president, and I served as president during COVID, and I have been on the board ever since. I've learned so much. Of course, everybody says it. I wish I had learned this earlier. I know I would have saved a lot of stress and sleepless nights, but it's okay. I'm here now, and serving has put me in the company of so many great people, members, corporate sponsors, and just specialists in the real estate world that help me sleep better at night. I just know I can lean on different experts if I have questions or problems.
Well, I think you first of all, you have the wherewithal to recognize, like, you are just kind of figuring it out. And I think the two lessons that come out of that is, number one, that's okay, right? I mean, you know, I think we all tend to look at people that start to find success in their life and career, investments, whatever it is. And it always feels like, man, if I was only as buttoned up as they were, if I had only had it as figured out as they do. And I guarantee you, they're looking at just as many people saying the exact same thing. So there's a big lesson there. And then number two is, once you face that realization, which is not a bad thing, it's how do you surround yourself with people that can help you feel, even when you don't, like you've got it figured out. So I want to talk about Jax Rhea. I want to talk a little bit about kind of the Real Estate Investment Club and Association group and model. I've been part of a couple of them for 19 years myself, and they're life-changing, literally and figuratively. And I want to talk about that kind of journey, because I think a lot of people are out there saying, I want to do this. I kind of know that I should do this, but, you know, they're looking around going, how do I get this support? So more to come on that, but we're going to throw you on the hot seat here. Nazreen, you're going to have to get through these quirky questions before we get to the backside and talk about Jax Rhea. So I'm going to go with the top envelope. Thank you, Miss Amy. As always, if you have questions to submit, send them to allaboutalts@newbutrust.com. All right. Just so you know, I don't read these until I open the envelope. So question number one, this is an easy one.
Mm-hmm.
Hardcover books or ebooks?
I read more ebooks, but I really, really love my hardcovers. I prefer hardcover books, but ebooks are so much easier to travel with and just...
I think that's a fair, you know, you use ebooks for convenience, but in a perfect world, if you were sitting at home, you're reading a hardcover.
Absolutely, yes.
Now, if this was for me, I'd read this and say, like, where's the third option, which is audiobook? So I read it like a third grade level.
I think I did that because I heard ebooks, but I interpreted it as audiobooks because I do a lot of audiobooks.
Oh, they're the best. Although you got to be careful with where you listen to them and the voiceover, because sometimes, you know, like on an airplane, if it's not a good, like, energetic voice, I mean, your eyes will get real heavy real fast.
That's right.
All right. If you could have a lifetime supply of one item, you can't sell it, but a lifetime supply of one item, what are you going with?
Oh my goodness. It's a toss up between organic grass-fed meat and vegetables. So I think I'd be good either way. Probably the meat. Yeah, if I had to choose one. Yeah.
All right. So we're going food and we're just going with the meat.
Yeah.
All right. Are you going camping or are you staying at a luxury resort?
Oh boy. Am I alone or am I with company?
You know, the good news is these are your questions. You can interpret them any way you'd like.
Right. Gosh, dang it. Camping or luxury resort? Yeah, today, I would say camping. If you'd spoken to me 10 years ago, luxury resort for sure.
It's funny how that comes full circle, right? There is something about the tranquility and peace and quiet of camping. Yes. The other side of that is, It's not nearly as comfortable as a luxurious resort. So I want the serenity, but I want a comfortable bed and someone to make it for me in the morning.
Yes.
Although I think there's now, I have not personally been, but I believe glamping is kind of a new age thing. And so maybe there is something somewhere in the middle.
Haven't been, but have heard of it.
Well, put it on the list of things to do. Nazreen, you are officially off the hot seat. You have survived it and you survived it very well. So let's kind of pick this conversation back up where we left off. And we were talking about, you know, JAXRIA is an acronym. You know, the term that we kind of see, or the acronym, is REIA. It's Real Estate Investor Association. There's a national association in which most of these regional associations are all part of. Anything under the national REIA is a nonprofit. So they're not here to get rich. There are dues and fees, but they are here to give back. There are for-profit, you know, and plenty of them, real estate schools, and they'll teach you how to do this and that. And there's nothing wrong with those. But my, you know, in 19 years of being in this business and being part of multiple investment clubs, I've spoken at a bunch of them, participated in thousands of them probably over the years. There's just no better value, at least to start. And if you want to go pay for a program, you know, it's kind of like going to the library and taking advantage of the free resources and then deciding if you want to go pay for college, right? And so, but you need the library foundation. I think that's what these REIAs are. So, you know, I've loved them. You mentioned kind of just how it saved you, right? Protects you a little bit from you. What's been, you know, how did you end up finding JAXRIA, getting involved? Like what was that like? Is that, you know, I think a lot of people feel like, well, it's this networking event. Now I got to go and I got to talk to people I don't know. And everyone there is definitely smarter than me. And I'm not going to know a thing. Like, this isn't right for me. How did you break through that?
Well, I found out about JAXRIA just from a coworker when I was thinking of leaving my job. She said, have you heard of JAXRIA? Go to the meetings. I highly recommend it. So I showed up on the first day and I just knew there was something there for me. It was a class. It was a quick start class on rehabbing. And I knew that, I guess because I'm just so systematic about the way I did things, I'm like, I need to do all the quick start classes. So that was my goal. And then I realized they have main monthly meetings and they have masterminds and network meetups. And I started, I mean, I was still working full time at the time. So I tried to carve a little bit of time. Luckily for me, I had done or fumbled through some real estate investments in the past. So I had a little bit of context. I wasn't like just showing up, not knowing everything, but there was a lot I didn't know. So I quickly grasped that JAXRIA was about not just the education, though we do see people who just sit class after class and don't really interact, don't really do deals, but it was about more than just educating and teaching the know-how. It really is a powerful networking tool for, you know, getting used, getting in touch with people, having, I love to say this, you know, you could be one conversation away from changing the rest of your life. So yeah. It really is what you make it. If you show up at a meeting and you never interact with anyone like I did initially, well, shame on you, because I was too scared for people to know how little I knew. I just sat there. I'm like, I treated it like a school. I'm coming to school. I'm coming to learn all this. And when I learn all of this, then I can have educated conversations with people. And I know I missed out so much. So I think I lost track of the question you asked me, but that was really my experience with JAXRIA and how I came to appreciate what it can offer. And as I started talking to people and I saw how helpful they were and generous they were with their knowledge and willing to introduce me to their contacts to help me navigate through specific things that I was experiencing, I really knew that I had to continue being a part of JAXRIA.
Well, I love hearing people's experience and entering into that world, because it's a lot of unknown, and it's a lot of, you know, sometimes you kind of, people are speaking a language and it's like, am I speaking that same language? They're using acronyms and terms, mm-hmm. and, you know, but what I learned quickly, and it sounds like you did as well, is that you're really not that far off, right? Like the gap between you and the people that you see at these groups that are like, they're really smart. They just have been doing it longer and they just have a little more experience. But when you can leverage their knowledge and experience, you learn so much faster.
Right, right. You're living multiple lifetimes by learning something that took someone years to figure out over and over again. The more you do that, yeah.
Yeah, I would say probably 20-30% of the real estate or private loan or, you know, private note deals I've ever done have all originated, been partnered with people that I met at real estate investment clubs. Mm. So, you know, it's, and a lot of these were deals I probably wouldn't, and I say 20%, sorry, let me rephrase that. 80% of the deals I've done have originated that, but 20% would be deals I would have never done on my own. And I think that's been really fun. It's like, I wouldn't do this, but when someone says, hey, this is what we're working on, and you're like, you know, that looks cool. So there's a lot to be learned there. You know, now you're on the other side of that, right? You've been president, you serve on the board. What would your advice be for someone that's considering, you know, they've never been to a meeting, maybe they've never done a deal. You at least had a couple of, you know, deals, whether they were done the way you would do them today or not, doesn't matter, but you had them under your belt. You were quote unquote an investor. What's a newbie do today? And what advice do you have for them if they just wanted to go out, you know, tomorrow night and just show up at a main meeting for one of these RIAs? What's the best way to approach it? How do they get the most out of it? What's your guidance?
Yeah, I literally show up. I mean, that's half of it. Show up to the meetings. I would encourage them to take our quick start classes. And due diligence really is such a big part of it. It's so foundational and sounds so simple, but I can't tell you how many times I ignored my due diligence. And that's when I found myself in the most trouble, whether it was people or the property, you know, just learn about due diligence and talk to people. And I would say even joint venture. So those first two houses was a joint venture deal. I partnered with someone on the acquisition side, on the rehab side. I didn't have time to manage a rehab. And I paid them a fee to help me acquire and rehab those properties. And they were mine at the end, but we had a contract between us. So I would say partner with someone, but attend a few meetings so you get a feel and a sense for which real estate investing strategy aligns with the resources you have. You don't need a lot of money. You can do hard money. You could do wholesaling. You don't need a lot of time. You could joint venture with somebody who has the time if you have the money, you know, just kind of figuring out what resources you have and then figuring out which real estate strategies align with those, that it's something you would enjoy. Because the path in real estate is just so varied. There are so many different ways that you can invest in real estate. So,
yeah, I think that was probably the piece for me. I mean, I grew up, my dad owned a convenience store and a small catering business, very blue collar, you know, but he always bought and sold real estate, you know, on the side. That was kind of his thing. But he always did rental properties. Everything looked the same, right? And, you know, as a kid, I mean, I always thought like, oh, great, a rental property. Now we got to go and clean up after another tenant. You know, it was a very family business. My dad was very hands-on. And so I just kind of assumed that real estate like fit in this tiny little box and you buy it and you rent it. And then, you know, every year, two, three, four, however long the tenant stays, they move out and you go in and you rinse and repeat, right? Get rid of the urine stain carpet from the dogs and whatever.
Right.
When I got to, you know, my first couple of real estate meetings, it was like wholesaling, subject to flipping. And it was like, wait a minute, I don't understand all this. Like, I thought you just buy and rent and then clean up and buy and rent and clean up. And so I think you've given some guidance to people out there is before you even think about what real estate is, understand that real estate there. I've probably seen 100 different types of deals, and I bet you there's 100 more that I haven't seen yet from different structures or strategies. So how did you hone in? You know, you ended up, you kind of started with a joint venture, right? And that was kind of your foray into how you entered into the market in Jacksonville. But from an education standpoint, a knowledge standpoint, knowing what you know today, would you have done the same thing? Would you have approached it differently? Like, what have you kind of learned through understanding all these different strategies in real estate?
Yeah. I think that I really do love the long-term, the buy and hold strategy. I love that I started off making an extra $100. I'm like, oh, I can pay my phone bill without really doing much work. And then that turned into my car payment, and then that turned into my rent. And it you know, that really excites me and it fits me. I'm intrigued by flipping. I've never done a flip. I think it would be so cool to get that big check. That feeling of, you know, moving at that pace, that's probably something that I would like to do. But if I had to do it all over again, there are things that I would do differently and decisions I would make differently. But my strategy that suits me the most is buy and hold. Also, I'm thinking, you know, for my kids, it gives them something like a start. So I like that long-term strategy. I think if I get brave enough, I might try a flip soon.
Well, and you know, it goes to show you those strategies, while they're both real estate, right? And they're both theoretically the same approach. They're so inherently different. I mean, one can be so hands-off and one may be so hands-on, yet you could make a case that either one could be hands-on or hands-off, right? And so it's not just understanding the strategy, it's understanding really the strategies inside the strategy and how do you do that. Real estate never ceases to amaze me, even though stuff looks the same and houses all look the same. And, you know, but there's just no two deals ever look the same, it feels like.
Every time I think, okay, I'm going to leverage what I learned on this past deal in this deal, I get a new set of challenges that I've never seen before. I'm like, when am I just going to rinse and repeat? I've never felt like I rinse and repeat, you know, but it's exciting because I learned how to JV with someone. I learned a tax deed strategy and that's something in your toolbox. And then for the first time I did hard money, that was something new. I learned how to do a cash out refinance. That's a new thing. I learned how to work with a wholesaler and, you know, it's just Septicon Well. My first Septicon Well property, I just rented, actually signed a lease yesterday for, you know, so yes, there's always something new, which is why it's so important to know the right people to turn to when, you know, when you need help. So.
Yeah. Having a team, having people that you can trust. I think anyone that says it can't say it emphatically enough, like the right people make all the difference. And, you know, we in our season one of the podcast, we ended the shows or each episode with our learn before you burn. And, you know, the idea of it was like, what experience do you have, right? Where you can tell us the experience and maybe I can learn the lesson without touching the hot stove. Because a lot of lessons in life, we learn them the hard way. And in real estate, there can be some very expensive lessons. And I do think everybody should learn some expensive lessons, right? It is like touching the stove. You got to kind of sometimes feel the heat. Yeah. But I don't need a deal to go completely sideways because of ignorance when I can turn, you know, to Nazreen and say, hey, what have you done in this scenario? And you're like, well, I'll tell you what not to do. Right. So there's that power in a community. And I think that's what these RIA groups provide, is that sense of community. Is that a fair way to put it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Learning from others' mistakes, and you're going to make your own, but you're just really, as an actor, you're controlling that risk. You're doing what you can to mitigate the risk. Okay. Because we're all going to, there's always going to be a surprise of some kind or something that we have to deal with. But if you do your homework and you listen to people who've been there already and you do your best to contain it, well, then that's really all you can do is your best.
Yeah. Now I've got to ask, you know, with your actuarial background and, you know, you're always thinking about risk, right? And risk management. And for most, I'd say we'll call them real estate preneurs. We all have these rosy glasses, right? This is the next best deal and this one can't lose. And this is a great buy. And you're like the yin and yang for, I'd imagine, a lot of this group where you're like, sounds great. Let me just run the numbers. Do you find yourself as like the voice of reason in the room with most people?
I take a long time to make a decision because I will run the numbers. And if the numbers don't make sense, like it will take a long time for somebody to convince me otherwise. So yes, I always build in conservatism. Now I say that, but I've made some devastating mistakes, and I've made them as recently as last year going into this year. So yes, I do my analysis. Yes, I do my math. And where I have the biggest place that I have been exposed to losing was the people aspect, just having the wrong contractor, having the wrong realtor, having the wrong mortgage broker. And that's where my most devastating mistakes came in, was not in the valuation, or did I get it? The math, I think the math for most real estate investors is easy. We have all the tools, we can teach you. And as an actuary, I don't think that adds, I mean, we can all learn it, right? That part is easy. The hard part is the execution and just trusting people to do what they say they're going to do. And again, if I had done my due diligence and if I had leaned on the RIA more, I wouldn't have experienced what I did. But I want to share something that's a little bit off topic of real estate. But you see, there's this part of me that I feel that, well, okay, here I'm the president of Jack's RIA and I'm supposed to have all this figured out. And so while I was going through this awful experience with this particular investment, I was almost too embarrassed to talk about it at the RIA. So I tried to find resources outside of the RIA. People I've met on, Facebook, who bought stuff for me from Facebook that said they were a contractor, realtors I met otherwise. I was not doing my due diligence, and I got so caught up in, I should know better. And this shouldn't be happening to me, that I was scared to talk to the people that I should have been talking to, because I thought they're going to look at me and say, how could you even make these kinds of decisions? Right. And I'm like, I just put so much pressure on myself and so much judgment on myself that I did not go to the resources that I knew were tried and true, that I had done business with in the past. And I was trying to solve it outside of the people I knew I could trust, because at that point I was just too embarrassed to say, hey, I messed up, help me. It's weird.
No, it's human nature. Think it's and I won't say foolish pride, but for in most cases when we don't do what we should have, a lot of times it traces back, at least I know in my life, that there's some foolish pride I'm generally holding on to. But, I think, and I appreciate the discussion, because it's something that a lot of people don't talk about. Right. And we have a lot of people on this show and they're great people and I'm not knocking them, but no matter what they say, they're grand slam hitters all the time. Well, when I do this, I knock it out of the park. When I do that, I knock it out of the park. And the reality of investing is, no, you don't. And it's okay. It's like a business. It's like a marriage. It's like kids. It's not always perfect. And anyone that says that it is hasn't been through the trials and tribulations, or just hasn't accepted the fact that it's not. And so I appreciate you being vulnerable enough to say, hey, like, I'm the president of this group. People think I'm the smartest person in the room and I've got this title. And you know what? You just serve a different function and you have experience that is valuable, but maybe on this particular deal in that particular area with that particular decision, someone else is probably a heck of a lot smarter. Mm-hmm. And you just have to be willing to ask. And, I really try to, my 12-year-old is at an interesting age, because you kind of start having more like meaningful discussions and then you finish them and you're like, I don't know how that went. I'm glad we had it. I don't know if it was well received. I don't know if he, texted his friends afterwards and was like, sorry, dad was being, crazy again, but I was explaining to him, as silly as this may sound, the difference between stupidity and ignorance. And, you know, ignorance is not a bad thing. It's curable. It's just accepting that you don't know. Right. But if you live your life in a world where you don't challenge that you just don't know, that's stupidity.
Right.
Right. Like, and what do you want to be in this world? Do you want to be considered stupid or do you want to be considered ignorant? And I take ignorant all day, but that starts with you. Right. It starts with me. It starts with us. It starts with him. Like, we have to challenge ourselves to say, do I know? Yes or no? Am I really getting the right opinion from the right people and seeking out the right guidance? And if I'm not doing that, then whatever decision I make, because I think I know when I know I don't, that's stupidity. And 9 out of 10 times, stupidity's gotten me in the most trouble I've gotten myself into. So definitely a fun discussion to have with a 12-year-old. Well, let's wrap things up. I first of all, thank you for being on the show. You know, we have so many different backgrounds. I think yours is such a fun one because you have, you know, a professional career. You've made a lot of mistakes. You've found a lot of success. You're actively involved in a community. And I think there's a lot of people listening today that hopefully kind of see that journey and say, hey, wait a minute, like I could see myself doing that too. And that would be a really good outcome. The second part of it is, you know, you have an approach of real estate that while you want to turn it on or turn it off, you have this kind of actuary brain of like, what are the numbers? And you said something to me that I heard and I can't unhear it is, you can learn the numbers, right? So like, you don't have an unfair advantage over someone else. You have a jump start, right? Mm-hmm. But the numbers are all learnable. It's all these intangible and soft experiences, i.e. selecting contractors, due diligence, that really probably are harder to figure out than the math on a deal. Is that, would you agree with that?
So 100% true, because you can, there are people, if you throw in the deal and say, is this a deal or not, they will do the math for you. We have people like that. Bring me and I'll tell you yes or no, I'm going to steal your deal. That is like a 30-minute conversation. Now you go find your contractor and you go figure out if you use hard money, who's going to refinance this property and find out if they're going to pull the right permits and if they're going to do the work in order. Are you going to do plumbing 3 different times? And you know, that type of stuff, that's the type of stuff that that'll get you if you're, again, not doing your due diligence. So.
Well, that's the beauty of real estate. It is, it's a business, and every business owner and entrepreneur will tell you, you're going to make some mistakes. You're going to have some bumps and bruises, but good for you for continuing to persevere. And thank you for the work and effort, you know, at Jack's Ria. It is a nonprofit. You're volunteering your time for the greater good of the real estate investment community. And there's a lot of people that have not stubbed their toes on some deals because of you and the work that you do. So thank you to you and the team. Last question for you, the way that we wrap season 2 up is very simple. What's keeping you up at night?
Yeah. You know, at night I ruminate a lot about mistakes I've made, things I should have done differently, things that I should know better, that I should have known better. And I think that's a battle that I have fought all my life. And I think, you know, like most of our demons, it really goes back to like maybe what we heard or what we experienced in our childhood. So I struggle with that. And it's a work in process. It's definitely a work in process. It's trying to undo the expectation that you should be perfect in every way. And that's how you prove your worth. Otherwise, you're worthless, you know. And these are just echoes of just the way I was raised. I don't even know how else to say it. So at night is when it gets me. At night is when I try to undo that. So really, it's focusing on treating myself with a little more compassion and forgiveness and practicing, you know, being non-judgmental towards myself. So if I had to say what keeps me up at night, it would be that and everything that comes with that, how I apply it to my day, to how I raise my kids, to my job, to my real estate, to the RIA. Yeah.
You got a lot of
process, though.
Yeah, you got a lot of things to be mindful of. Well, a little bit of grace goes a long way in this world, but certainly extending that same bit of grace to ourselves is a really strong takeaway today. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Well, Nazreen, it has been great having you. We'll certainly have to have you back on and see how your progress is going, and see what other bumps and bruises you've picked up along your investment career. For those out there listening, go online to the National Association of National Real Estate Investor Association. You can see all the links there to all the local clubs. They're, I believe, in every state, if not multiple locations in almost every state. So, show up to a meeting, introduce yourself to someone you don't know, get a little more comfortable being uncomfortable. But if you want to pursue real estate, you won't find a better resource right in your backyard at very little expense to you. So, Nazreen, thanks again for your time. Thanks for all you do at Jack's RIA, and thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Jason. I had a great time. Thank you for having me.
It's been a lot of fun. For those listening, please be sure to hit the like, share, subscribe button. Keep helping us build this community as we continue to try to grow and help people understand that real estate's not scary, and alternative investments can provide a lot of opportunity, but certainly requires some education. And we'll continue to try to bring on the guests that help get that information across to you. But thanks, everybody, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope the information within this podcast has given you the tools that you need to find your way to financial independence. We would love to partner with you on this journey. Text ALTS, that's ALTS, to 407-708-1853 to learn more about how to get started today. Don't forget to follow us to make sure you don't miss a second of content, and we'll see you next week.